It's time for JT the Brick.
See, the key to good sports radio, not great, but good sports radio, is you don't have to force it. I don't want to come in here and force Raider content on days where there's no Raider content. What are we going to do? We're going to talk sports. All different types of sports, because we do a sports talk show. I mean, I'm dealing with insanity here.
This guy's legit, but wow.
Calm down. We're going to start talking sports.
Did you hear what I said? I'm good.
JT the Brick.
We're providing content here every day with opinions. And I'm pretty strong with my opinions. I think you'd agree, and I stand by them. Mixing in the NBA, mixing in basketball and the Golden Knights.
This has been the longest running show in the history of the Raiders. Nothing's close. You better be vocal today, everybody. I'm demanding greatness on the phones. Get your ass in gear today. I got my A game.
There's never an off season in the Raider Nation. Got it? That's the show.
And now,
Fandemonium.
Here's JT the Brick.
All right, hour number two of the show. Thanks for joining us. My conversation with Lionel Hollins coming up as he played with Bill Walton. I was on the air yesterday when it was announced that Bill Walton was there and he passed away, and I did a whole show on it yesterday. I opened up the first hour. I'll lead this hour again with what's happening here on the passing of Bill Walton, who had deep connections to Vegas, the Grateful Dead, the Pac-12, UCLA. You know the story with Bill Walton. He was incredible, an unbelievable human being, a broadcaster. Not many like him. Not many like him. So I think that's really important to talk about his life today. So if you have a Bill Walton story, and we've heard a few in the first hour, you catch us during lunch or evening drive back east, wherever you are. We got a big audience here streaming the show on the Raiders mobile app. Give us a Bill Walton story. What'd you enjoy about him? If you're a UCLA fan, you're a broadcast fan, if you like the Grateful Dead, anything. Again, this is Bill Walton. We'll do it for one day. He deserves that, and I'm going to miss Big Red. Got a chance to meet him a number of times. And I don't know how many times I interviewed him. It wasn't a lot. I mean, he didn't do a ton of radio. I think in the late 90s and 2000s, I had him on, you know, six, seven, eight times. And I just bumped into him more and more in Vegas at the Pac-12, and the Pac-12 just came to an end, which is interesting, Bobby. Isn't that interesting, as we talked about that, the Pac-12 comes to an end, his beloved conference. So if you look at the greatest athletes to ever play in the Pac-12, ever, Jackie Robinson at UCLA broke the color barrier later on with the Dodgers, but was an icon at UCLA baseball and football. John McEnroe at Stanford, Tiger Woods at Stanford. All the swimmers, the gymnasts, the softball, the baseball players. Think of the history of the Pac-12, Walton's one. Or 1A behind Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, then exactly. Luis Sender. And the final Pac-12 game was this past weekend, and Walton dies the Monday after the Pac-12.
That's just the height of irony, really.
It is.
I mean, it's a shame. I mean, I like Bill Walton. I've met him a couple times. Mm-hmm. He's always been really cool to me. Big, huge guy. We're both dead guys, so we had something to connect on. Me, him, and Kevin McHale, mm-hmm. back when I used to do the Celtic beat reporter thing back in the early 90s, mm-hmm. before I met you, I would hang out there with McHale. He'd be shooting baskets or whatnot, and Walton would come up, and the two of them went to probably like a couple dozen dead shows, and we would just start conversing mm-hmm. about different dead shows and mm-hmm. whatnot. He's a good guy.
He is a good guy. He had a great time with him. I posted a picture with him and my dad from 12 years ago on Twitter, X at JT the Brick, and he towered over us, towered over us. My dad's not a small guy. He towered over all of us, and that was interesting to see, to get to meet him in a work environment too. Bill Walton, rest in peace, one of the greats to ever do it on multiple platforms, which is pretty important. We're talking about the Raiders and this topic today. I get notes every day from the Raiders on what everybody's writing about. In the paper, it was a little bit about Jim Otto, Raiders training camp. Then it came across a gambling story. But Vinny Bonsignor, who we'll have on a little bit later this week, and Vinny jumped in for me last week. Raiders are excited about the start under their new OC. It's easier than last year. So Michael Mayer was very outspoken. He said this past Tuesday, it's easier than last year. After the Raiders finished all their organized team activity. I've heard that on and off the record, that it's interesting here, that Josh McDaniels ran it differently. He's more hardcore, more intense, very critical in analysis and breakdowns and what happened. Everything they did at practice was on video. Josh McDaniels saw every second of it and was a highly critical guy. That's his style of coaching. Okay, worked as a coordinator, didn't work as a head coach. Now Luke Getsy comes in, and we don't know a lot about him, but the players seem to be really excited. Again, from Michael Mayer, I'd say it's a little bit more simple a little bit more simple, a little bit easier to understand. Now, I'm a big John Gruden guy, right, over the years. John Gruden, very complex verbiage in the language of that offense. Then the Raiders went from John Gruden to Josh McDaniels with the same type of hard verbiage, very complex playbook. Now it seems like the players are more comfortable with it being a little bit easier in regards to the verbiage. That's a good thing. As Vinny wrote, Getsy doesn't have a settled quarterback situation with the Raiders. Second-year passer Aiden O'Connell and veteran Gardner Minshew are competing for the starting offense here. Vinny went on to write, and he talked about this. It's an intriguing time because Getsy also has a set of intriguing weapons. The Raiders' skill position group includes wide receivers Davante Adams, Jacoby Myers, Trey Tucker, Michael Gallup, tight ends Michael Mayer, Brock Bowers, and running back Zamir White. What more do you need? I mean, really, what more do you need compared to other teams? I'm not saying there's not better offenses there, but there aren't many when it comes to personnel. So Davante should be familiar with the system, as Getsy was a coach of his in Green Bay. And Vinny Bonsignor went on to write, the offense has a few key components. Getsy wants to run the ball effectively, wants to make play-action passes a staple. I like play-action. He wants to attack the middle of the field and take shots. Well, with Brock Bowers, I don't know anybody better coming into the league at the middle of the field than him. I don't know anybody. I really do. He's also got to be adaptable. Getsy will also have to be flexible on certain situations. He showed the ability to adjust when the Raiders played the Bears last season. Fields was hurt, so backup Tyson Bagent got the start. Undrafted free agent, and the Bears whipped the Raiders 30-12, and was the beginning of the end for Josh McDaniels. That was the beginning of the end. Getsy believes that he can adapt, and that'll be a big part of his job. So I like this column by Vinny because it tells me two things. We have the offensive weapons here, a season ticket holders to win. There's not going to be a game that we go up. Any Raider fan will say there's not going to be a game where the Raiders go up against an opponent and say we can't win. I really believe that. If I didn't believe it, I wouldn't say it. Now, are the Raiders better than Kansas City? No. Are the Raiders equal to Cincinnati or the Chargers? Yes. Yes, Cincinnati is not an elite team. Cincinnati's good. They're not elite. They got problems. They got chatter in that organization. Is Baltimore better than the Raiders? Absolutely. Can the Raiders win in Baltimore? That'll be the toughest game of the year on paper, no doubt. At Kansas City, at Baltimore, two tough teams. Most teams in the NFL, NFC, the NFC teams, of course, and many AFC teams don't have to play at Kansas City and at Baltimore. The Las Vegas Raiders do. That makes your schedule tough. But the Raiders have an opportunity to be as good as some of these other teams that are ranked ahead of them. And we mentioned the season win total on the Raiders and how important it's going to be, as the Westgate has it set up at 7. So that's do or die land. If they win 6 or 8, you win. Okay, you're not going to win on a 7 on a push. If you like the Raiders over 7, you got to bet it at 8. You think they could get 8, and we'll see what happens. Also, Vinny wrote recently about the 3 things to watch. At the OTAs, the cornerback competition was number one. And as they brought in Richardson and a 7th-round pick, Devonshire, so they got a 4 and a 7 overall. Ja'Corian Bennett, the 4th-round pick last year, will have a large say in the direction that the Raiders go if he's able to play. I got to hope he's a little bit better. Vinny also talked about a no-man, where I haven't heard a word from Byron Young's progress. He was a 3rd-round pick last season, Byron Young out of Alabama. Where is he going to fit in the defensive tackle rotation? He was active for only 6 games. He had a total of 4 tackles. How was a guy drafted out of Alabama in the 3rd round for this organization and only had 4 tackles? How is that possible? That to me is improbable or impossible that could happen. So we got to go back to the drawing board. Last year, and I liked the job Dave Ziegler did. I thought Dave was good. Dave was progressing. You know, the coach was going to get fired. Dave Ziegler was part of the package deal. I thought Dave done a, had some principles set to do a good job building potentially a team. And if he gets a chance to do it somewhere else, I wish him well. But how the hell did we take Byron Young and Jakorian Bennett, 3 and 4, in the 3rd and 4th round and pretty much not get a lot out of them? Those are big picks. We're not talking about Max Crosby in the 4th round, everybody. And then Vinny talked about wide receiver depth, which I disagree with him on this, but it's not that he's wrong. I don't think it's an issue here. I think the Raiders are set and locked at wide receiver. I don't really care much about the depth. I'll be calling the games on radio. In the preseason here, I'll be calling a lot of games where the backup wide receivers will be playing most of the game. I'll deal with it then. This show is not about practice squad wide receivers. This show isn't about the 6th wide receiver unless we got to break glass in case of emergency. We got to break glass and put a 6th or a 5th wide receiver in to see what's going to happen. But Vinny made a good point. Still, the Raiders need a 3rd wide receiver to emerge to complement Devontae Adams and Jakobi Meyers. I have the answer to that. Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers is my 3rd wide receiver. I don't look at him as a tight end. I will not look at him as a tight end. I'm looking at Brock Bowers as a weapon. But do they need enough? Can Michael Gallup be the 3rd? I thought Trey Tucker was the 3rd last I looked. But I think Vinny made a really good point. He said 2nd-year pro Trey Tucker flashed big playability as a rookie with 3 catches of 47 yards or more. His speed's a weapon. Now he needs to improve as a route runner. I definitely believe he needs to do this. I definitely believe he has to do this. So that's where we're at, everybody. That's what we're doing today. There's not much out there, and I like it. I like the lack of drama with the Raiders. I like the health of the team in general. I think the team came together, and they had really good attendance, and everybody is building on that if you want to get through. And we're also talking about Bill Walton. What is your connection to Bill Walton? 702-365-9200. Bill's one of the rare athletes when they pass away. He's got a much deeper life than his athletic ability. Can't say that about everybody. And this guy, what he did off the court, after his basketball career, was fantastic. I thought it was fantastic. So I'm excited. I'm excited for Bill Walton and his legacy. You might say to yourself, man, JT's really fired up today about Bill Walton. I knew him. I didn't know him great, but I knew him well. And I really miss him. And I miss Jim Otto. And they both passed away, and they were legends. 2 different times. You know, Jim Otto was 86. Bill Walton was 71. And I didn't know Bill Walton was sick. I wish I did, but it was none of my business. It's one thing my wife said. She goes, did you know Bill was ill? I go, no one did. I only think a few people must have knew. It didn't even sound like the Grateful Dead knew, and I'm sure they knew. As Dead & Company is playing over at the Sphere. So we got a lot to get to here. What I wanted you to do now is listen to my conversation yesterday with Lionel Hollins. And when I found out we got Lionel Hollins yesterday, it was uncomfortable for me in a way. When someone dies, I don't like to call people and say, come on the radio. I mean, minutes afterwards. My producer did, because they had a relationship with Lionel Hollins, who was on the championship team that Walton played on in Portland, and they were best friends for a chunk of their career. So I was kind of in shock when we were able to get him on right after the passing, like 2 hours after Bill Walton's passing was announced, and I asked him about his relationship with Big Red.
Yeah, when I was in college, UCLA was one of the top teams. When I was in high school, I always admired John Wooden and, you know, Kareem and Sidney Wicks and the whole crew that came through that legendary run that John Wooden had at UCLA. So Bill was one of my favorite people, and then I was fortunate to be drafted by the Trailblazers out of Arizona State and became a teammate. And when I came to town, Bill looked me up and invited me to go work out and to play one-on-one. And, you know, we became fast friends. And, you know, even after my first year in the league, Bill was hurt a lot. And then that summer, he and I spent the whole summer to lifting weights and running through Portland, the streets of Portland, and up to Mount Tabor in Portland, and just getting ready for the season and playing a lot of basketball with each other and against each other. And eventually, you know, we had the championship, and we had such great chemistry, and And then I got traded from Philadelphia to San Diego, and Bill was in law school, and he invited me to stay at his house. So I stayed at his house until I was able to find a house of my own, along with my wife and a future child. And so we've been friends forever, and we talk, and, you know, he came to Memphis a couple of times, and, you know, we would meet in Las Vegas at the Summer League, the Retired Players mm-hmm. Association, All-Star Games. And so we just, we're continually in contact with each other, and I knew something was amiss, because whenever Bill has any physical issues, when he went through his feet surgery and those surgeries that he had there, and then, you know, his back and his hip and all the stuff that he went through, he usually would check out until he had recovered. But just a few days ago, I told my wife, I said, something's up with Bill. I said, you know, something must be going on with him physically, because I haven't heard from him. He doesn't return my texts. He hasn't answered any calls. And so this morning, wow. I get a text from a friend of mine who said he had passed away, and here we are.
Lionel Hollins is our guest. He has such a heavy heart. I can't imagine, again, the friendship you had, your athletes, but looking at him as he peacefully protested at UCLA, the injuries, Lionel, if you could really jump on that a little bit more about how difficult was it for you to be there when Bill was rehabbing, knowing he wanted to be out there with you, was such a great player, a champion, the MVP of the finals, and it wasn't his fault that he had these injuries, and fans didn't know back then. We didn't have SportsCenter. We didn't have that, and we found out that he was trying to rehab to get back on the court with you.
Well, that's who Bill was. He was always positive about his injuries. He felt like, you know, something was going to turn around, and they were going to figure out what was exactly wrong, and they were going to solve the issue, and then he was going to be able to play freely. He had the 1 year with us that he played freely, and then he had the year in Boston where he played freely, and he won two championships. He was one of the all-time great centers, and I hear people say, well, he shouldn't be one of the top 50, the top 75. He shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, but obviously the Hall of Fame is not just about professional basketball. He was an outstanding college basketball player. You know, they won, 80-some games in a row before losing. And he was a key factor in all of that. He was a key factor in our championship run. He was a key factor in the Boston championship run from the bench, even though they had Larry Bird, Mikhail, and those guys. He was a big factor in that, and he was MVP of the league. He was MVP of the finals. He was just a great defensive player. He was a great teammate. Bill could score, but that wasn't his thing. He Joker reminds me a little bit of Bill. The difference is Joker's a better ball handler and better shooter, but Bill inside was definitely better. And I can't say Joker's a better passer, but we played through Bill, and he was a great passer for us as well. But none of the stats meant anything to Bill. You know, he didn't care about scoring. And in fact, my one great memory is I had my career high of 43 points in a game, and I think Bill had 2 or 3 points. But he had like 11 or 12 rebounds, and he was controlling the game from a defensive perspective while allowing me to control the game from an offensive perspective. Mm-hmm. And that was really who he was. And he used to tell me when I was a rookie, you don't have to play poorly when we lose. You can still have a great game and we lose. And those are the things that stood out. And it was like, let the game come to you. Just play for whatever you have to do for this moment. And he was a mentor in that regard, because he truly understood how to win.
Lionel Hollins is kind enough to join us. Last one, Lionel. How was he as a dad, a husband, a humanitarian? Just the impact that he had. We were talking about the Grateful Dead, traveling with music and the peace and love. And just, I wanted to end this with his friendship, but more importantly, what type of dad he was and the impact he had as a family man.
Well, Bill was a great dad. You know, they were very athletic family, as everybody knows. When I lived with him, there were a number of people living in the house. You know, we had somebody in the one bedroom, somebody in the other bedroom, somebody on the couch. He had a teepee in the backyard, and a lot of times he and his wife slept out there in the teepee. And but we were always in sports. We played basketball, we played tennis, we'd swim. We'd go over to Balboa Park and play basketball. We'd go to the beach, and we'd load up the truck, and, you know, we'd get out there, and, you know, Bill played whatever sport that was out there, you know, beach volleyball, the tennis. And his kids were always there and always a part of all of that, you know. And I think that they were loved, and they had a great mentor in Bill, and he loved his boys. And I think it was apropos that he didn't have any girls. He was a guy dad, and that's how he carried on in his life. And he was a true friend. He was loyal. He'll give a friend anything off his back, you know. And he was always calling me, and he was seeing how I was doing and making sure that I was on the upbeat when things went down for me in the NBA. Say I got fired, he would call me and tell me, you know, that was their loss, and, you know, you should deserve to be there, and you're a genius. You know, he wrote an article one time for Sports Illustrated. I had to call him up, and I said, Bill, I don't know who you're talking about. You're so gracious, and your platitudes toward me, I didn't even know that was me. So he was that kind of guy.
Lionel, I'm sorry for the loss of your great friend. I really appreciate you joining us. Thanks for sharing such great stories, and may you and your family get through this difficult time. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that was my conversation yesterday with Lionel Hollins, best friends for most of his life with Bill Walton, to talk to him right after he found out that his good friend passed away and how great of a person Bill Walton was and the type of teammate he was, and especially after their basketball career. So Bill Walton passed away on Memorial Day, and we're talking about that. The Celtics did a nice tribute. They're going to do a nice one, I'm assuming, for the finals. Indiana, Rick Carlisle was his former teammate on that 86 championship team. He was kind of worked up, too, before the game and after the game, talking about his relationship with the great Big Red, Bill Walton. If you haven't had a chance to call in on that, if you knew Bill Walton, if you remember something from Vegas to the Bay Area, something music-related, we have the ability to talk to you today. 702-503-7454 if you want to get in. The NBA Finals seems to be set, as we look at, you know, the NBA Finals got the Celtics. We don't know on the other side, but I'm assuming Dallas is definitely going to win this game four against Minnesota. I don't see Minnesota coming back and coming through there. And if Dallas ends up winning with Kyrie Irving, that'll be one of the bigger shocks that I've seen in my career in 10, 20 years. I didn't think Kyrie Irving stood a shot in Dallas at all, even being interested. I didn't even think he'd be interested in being there for more than 10 minutes. And I was wrong. I really criticized him hard during COVID. You know, we all had opinions during COVID. Vaccination or not, wear a mask or not, play or not, are you available for your teammates? I'm not backing down from that. I was, at the time with the information I had, I was pretty critical of everything Kyrie Irving. He was not available for his team. And I wanted to talk about that. And Kyrie Irving is doing great, and I'm giving him his flowers. It's one thing I got to do as a sports talk host. When I'm wrong, if you catch me or I catch me, I'm not saying I was wrong about Kyrie, his flat earth theory, leaving his team to go to his sister's birthday party. I ripped him hard. But now I'm giving him all the credit in the world because he's playing so well. And he can get to the front of the rim. He reminds me of Allen Iverson in his absolute prime. And with him and Luka Doncic, maybe you don't have to have a big three. Maybe you just need a big two. I mean, the Celtics have Tatum and Brown. Do the Celtics have a big three? Well, Porzingis can be a three. Horford's been a very good player. But maybe you can do it with two stars on a team and you don't need three and all this ring chasing going on. Out to Portland, Oregon, where Bill Walton spent a pretty good portion of his life. Raider Mike, thanks for calling. What's happening?
What's up, JT? Been a while. Anyway, sad day here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bill was Bill. I mean, the stories are epic.
Mm-hmm.
I watched him win that championship here. I watched him, his bike get stolen in front of me. You know, he was a dude that just quintessential Oregonian. It's about the best way I could put Bill Walton.
Yeah, I also think, Mike, not to interrupt, but I think that he was really disappointed that the Portland organization put him in harm's way, didn't trust the injuries, and wanted him to play when he was injured and hurry up to get back on the court, which I can understand why, because he was the best player in basketball and an MVP, and they were a championship team. I understand the impatience they had, but that ended up running him out of Portland to the Clippers, not trusting the organization, and you were there for that. Those must have been tough times.
Horrifying times, JT. I mean, we picked Bowie with Jordan.
Yeah.
Picked Sam. Durant. we could have picked Durant over Odin. It's on and on. Brandon Roy. I mean, we are cursed. And Bill Walton is the start of what we call the Blazer curse here, up here in Portland. I'll be back in Vegas in October, but hey, you're too hot down there. I'm here for the summers.
Yeah, it is too hot there, man. I don't plan on visiting you in Portland, but I hope to see you here in October. The longer I've been here, as I hit ground, I've been coming here since the 80s, but I truly moved here in 96. Any chance you can get out of here in the summer, just for a little bit of time, is a smart thing to do. I love it here. I was in the pool all weekend with my dad. My mom sits out. She doesn't get in the pool. Dad gets in there with us. Played a lot of golf. Ran around town. Oh, wanted to share that with you, Bobby. Shout out to Emmett Smith. My dad's 86th birthday party, my son's 23rd, was at Emmett's restaurant on the Vegas Strip. Incredible evening my buddy Todd put together for us. Went in there, and we surprised my mom and dad with my cousin, who flew into town from the Bay Area. He walked in, and my parents were so surprised. I mean, it took them a while to compose themselves. They had such a good time seeing my cousin, my mom's nephew, who came in. And then we sat down and had everything from sushi to bolognese, to steak, espresso martinis, cerveza, good wine. What a fantastic experience. If you haven't been to Emmett's, named after, obviously, Emmett Smith, the all-time leading rusher, head on down. It's right there in Fashion Show Mall on the Strip side next to Benihana. Capital Grill's there. The parking was easy and free. We had a great time. And we walked the Strip afterwards for a few minutes and got a chance to look across the street at Wynn and see some cool things. But I had a great time at Emmett's and want to thank the entire team over there that put on a nice party for my dad and my son for their birthdays. That was a fantastic night, and I highly recommend you go back if you get a chance. 702-365-9200. I got about a half hour to go here, and it's on one of those days where Bill Walton's a bigger topic than the Raiders. We'll go around the league, too, on the NBA playoffs, the hockey playoffs. Wouldn't it be nice tonight to be going to a Western Conference final, game 3 or 4? Wouldn't it be nice tonight to be walking into T-Mobile for some hockey? I mean, it's only Edmonton and Dallas. You're not talking about two teams that the Knights couldn't beat. And we're not there. And I told you this would happen, man. When you lose your hockey team in the playoffs, it's a long road watching these other teams play. We're brought to you by the DiCastaVerde Law Group, Alex and Orlando DiCastaVerde.
Years ago, the Celtics gave me a chance to be a part of something special. And it has changed my life immeasurably. But what I learned here was so much greater than anything that I possibly imagined.
He loved every aspect of being a Celtic. So he was the sixth man, unlike one we've ever seen. No sixth man has ever altered the game in the manner that Bill Walton did.
Wow, that's Bob Ryan, the legendary Boston Globe columnist on Walton as a sixth man. Love being a Celtic. That was an interesting journey. A guy from San Diego goes to UCLA, to Portland, to the LA Clippers. I had someone say in the chat, the greatest Clipper to ever live was Bill Walton. Don't know about that, but it's something to bring up. He left Portland to go to the Clippers. But I thought his crowning achievement was the 86 Celtics playing with Larry Bird and going on to be being one of Larry Bird's best friends. JT, back with you. About a half hour to go if you want to get in. You have a story on Bill Walton and the impact that he had as a broadcaster. Or anybody else that had an interaction with Bill Walton. We had a couple of good calls in the first hour on that. The Celtics have advanced. They advance over Indiana. Really interesting series because as a Knicks fan, I wanted to play the Celtics, but the Knicks were injured in the playoffs down the stretch. They were a mass unit. So Indiana had some momentum to go in there and try to do something, and they were ahead in all and three of the four games. They were ahead with 90 seconds to go, and they found a way to lose all of them. Down the stretch in this last game, I just thought Boston with Pritchard and some of their players and what they were doing with bench players, they just had a little bit more juice.
Celtics missed two free throws, give up a three, and now they trail for the first time. Pritchard trying to end that, and he does with an immediate putback three right up the floor.
If you look at the Celtics, they had a good bench play. Indiana's bench, I thought, was better, but everybody stepped up in this game. White with the corner three in the fourth quarter as it looked like they were going to lose this game. I really thought Boston was going to lose. Indiana would catch them for one game. Wasn't the case.
A chance for the Celtics to win the Eastern Conference Championship on the road as they did 2 years ago. Jalen stops on a dime, dribbles to the middle of the floor, jump pass out of the corner. Derek White for three. Got it! Derek White from the right corner has given Boston a 105-102 lead.
And just when it's a tie game or they're losing or you just don't think they're going to win, someone on that Celtic team steps up and knocks down a big shot and gives them the ability to win. All Celtics as they cruise to a four-game sweep at Indy.
Tatum pushes off, steps back, three in the air, no good. Rebound, Drew Holiday, 4 seconds to go. Kick out Jalen. Can they get to him to commit the foul? They cannot, and it's over. It's over. The Boston Celtics swarm the floor. All year they said this team couldn't win in the clutch. They said they couldn't win at home. They said they played with their food. And they said the season was a failure if they didn't reach the finals. They have had a bad year because game one is in Boston on June the 6th.
Oh, give me a break. No one thought the Celtics were going to get there. A bunch of hometown garbage. Hometown garbage. The Celtics are the best team in basketball. Before the start of the year, they easily advanced to the NBA Finals. Jaylen Brown, winner of the Larry Bird Trophy. Larry Bird Trophy as the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. So that's a nice move for him overall. One of their owners, Mr. Grossbeck, talked about this, and they won this game, and they clinched the series on the day that Bill Walton, one of their great players, passed.
Well, all I can think about right now is we lost a great Celtic to Bill Walton, one of the greatest Celtics of all time. This is dedicated to Bill.
Nice dedication by the Celtics on the day that Bill Walton was announced of his passing. Brown named the MVP at a tremendous series. He's a two-way player.
It is my honor and it's my privilege, Jaylen Brown.
You know, Brown's a pretty humble guy, does a lot in the community. He's just a winner. He's a winner and doesn't care about individual awards. He was kind of shocked by this.
I wasn't expecting that at all. You know, I'll never win, so I was just happy that we won. And give credit to Indiana. You know, they played us tough. I know, like, people think that Indiana wasn't a good team or whatever the case may be. I mean, I thought they were as tough as anybody we played all season.
Jason Tatum's one of the best players in the league, and he's getting a reputation of getting to the finals or getting to the conference finals. He's got to win. This is not – Kevin Garnett had that pressure on him. Paul Pierce, the pressure's now on this guy, Jason Tatum.
It's special, right? Even though we've been there before, most of us have, you don't take it for granted, right? We were excited. It's the hell of a team we just played. They made us earn every single game, and we're extremely grateful to, move on to the finals.
I give Indiana a lot of credit. They played their second straight game without all-star Tyrese Halliburton, and that gave Boston a better opportunity to win. But Indiana got swept, and it was much closer than a sweep. So for Boston, here's the problem now, Bobby. The game one of the NBA Finals is until June 6th. June 6th. If you look at your calendar, it's May 28th. Let's assume Dallas wins tonight. How the hell can the NBA survive 10 days off? How? How can the NBA go from everybody watching the playoffs, and let me preface this by saying less people are watching the NBA than they have in the Michael Jordan era, but they still get a pretty big audience for the playoffs. So let's assume tonight that Dallas wins, and they win on May 28th, and we're talking June 6th until basketball is played again. 9 days, is that? That's too long to wait. They can't speed this up because arenas are booked for concerts and events. But you got to find a way to change that and break that. You got to have this. If Dallas wins tonight, which is, what's today, Tuesday? You got to be playing by Friday, Saturday, this Sunday, and no. We're talking about a start time, and this is when sports really get screwed up. So this weekend is the weekend of June 1st and 2nd. They wouldn't start till a week from this Thursday, and it's only Tuesday. That's some bad scheduling, man. That's why when you think of the refs and the leagues and everybody talks about, you know, the refs want to extend the series, wink, wink. You know, we don't want to see a sweep. That's what they were scared of with the Warriors. When the Warriors were building their dynasty, they wanted the Warriors to play at least 5-6 games and not sweep everybody, Bobby. This could be the perfect storm for your Celtics.
Well, hopefully. But we go through this every year. It's a matter of the scheduling. Because when you get to the Western and Eastern Conference Finals, they play it out as if it's going to go to seven games. And then they give them another 2-3 days off afterwards. So that's why we got to wait 9-10 days.
Yeah, and I'm all for waiting a few days to play again, but not this long. So that's a topic that we're going to talk about maybe here in the next couple of days. Breaking news today, Drake May agreed to terms on his rookie contract. That's important because he's a top quarterback. Could have went number one overall in the draft overall. So he gets under contract here as they are starting there. And there's a couple other players that have still not been signed that we're keeping an eye on. You know, I looked at the NFL, the top 100 free agents, and look at Hunter Renfrow. He's a hell of a player. Hunter Renfrow was a hell of a player for a few years here. I look at some of the cornerbacks that are still unsigned. There's rumors of Yannick Ngakoue, where he could sign on a one-year deal. There are some football players, as we wait for this June 1st, and to get out of the under that Jimmy Garoppolo contract, where the Raiders are going to get a little bit of financial relief coming up, and have the money to go out and get another player, or maybe two. Snow Raider is out in beautiful Lake Tahoe. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks, Bobby. Thanks, JT. Yeah, sad day about Mr. Walton. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I don't have any personal stories, but I've been seeing the Grateful Dead since 1983, so I'm sure I was at some shows with Bill in the crowd just hanging out and spreading the free love and spirit that he was all about. Also, I'm going to be there Saturday for Dead & Company, and I appreciate all your feedback earlier this year when you were there for you too. But whenever I think basketball outside of, you know, Jordan and those guys, it's definitely Bill Walton. He was everywhere. He was bigger than life, and his personality matched it. So rest in peace, Bill.
Nicely said. That's all we were looking to do today is hear some people say rest in peace to Bill Walton. You know, just touch on that a little bit. The Sphere for Dead & Company, you know, you can look at it two ways when you go to a concert. Do you want to know what's going to happen at the concert before you go? Most people don't want to go to a movie and know the outcome of the movie. I don't care. If it's a good movie, I'm going to go see it, and if I hear a little bit about it, I'm all right with it. Concerts are a little bit different. You know, I'm a Stones fanatic. My wife and I, July 4th, are going to Vancouver to see the Stones on July 5th. I don't want to know the set list, but I have a pretty good idea of every song they're going to play. I don't need to know it an hour beforehand, but I got a pretty decent idea of what they're going to play.
Don't be so sure of that.
Yeah, well, you know, I got an idea.
No. Dude, I've been watching their set list. They're not playing the same set every. The last one they did over in Sunday over in the Meadowlands, they brought up Midnight Rambler. They brought up Bitch. They brought up like five or six songs that didn't get played in Vegas.
But I don't want to know ahead of time. I want to go in there and be surprised. And when it comes to Dead & Company, Dead & Company is going to play. I guess they added some other dates on the back end at the Sphere here, too. Just want to see high energy. I don't want to go to a Dead show and fall asleep. I'm not at the age anymore where I want long space and drums. I want some upbeat tunes. I want John Mayer to rock, and hopefully they dedicate the rest of the tour to Bill Walton. Because I was talking to Ed Graney in the hallway. Ed Graney, the great journalist here in town and radio host, and he's from San Diego. We were touching on Bill Walton. He said Bill Walton hid his sickness and illness from everybody. We didn't know Bill Walton was ill. He kept doing games right down to the end there. So I'm hoping we get more Bill Walton, Grateful Dead, Dead & Company. Where was the image and likeness, Bobby, on the Sphere of Bill Walton? I threw that out at the Sphere. I was like, where is that? Let's kind of get, you know, something going with Bill Walton on the Sphere. I thought they would have that up by last night.
I don't know this to be a fact, but I know they are in the planning stages. Go back next week.
Yeah, I hope something good happens there for that. All right, when we come back, we'll wrap it up here on the other side. A lot more to get to as we get you ready for the NBA Finals. Look, if I have to do a show without the Raiders really breaking any news here, I'm going to go to the NBA. because that's all we got this time of year. I got the NBA Finals, and we got the Hockey Stanley Cup Conference Finals and the Stanley Cup, and not a lot of people are interested in hockey around here, let alone the Vegas Golden Knight fans from time to time. I got to kind of rattle the cage and wake them up here. So we're talking sports, and remember when baseball used to work on sports radio? That's like the dark ages. So I can play a baseball home run from time to time. But we're waiting on the Raiders. We're waiting on another round of OTAs. Training camp right around the corner. A little trip to cool off in Costa Mesa and to see what happens on the other side. Resorts World. Took Mom and Dad there. They like going there. Mom wants to play the slots. We go to Resorts World. Dad and I head out to the pool, sit back, cool off, have a cold drink. The pool's at Resorts World. They have the nightclub Zook. They have so many other places to hang out there. Mulberry Street Pizza. You know, I'm a Grimaldi's guy, but a good slice of Mulberry with the Mike Tyson statue doesn't hurt. And Red Tail, one of their sports venues. Resorts World, proud partner of our show.
Nuggets won't foul here with 7 on the shot clock. Conley left angle. Drives on Michael Porter Jr. Runs it up. No. Slam follow. Karl Anthony Towns. He soared in from the wing. He puts the Wolves up 7 with 39 seconds left.
Yeah, Karl Anthony Towns is getting a lot of heat. JT back with you. We're brought to you by La Casa Cigars. If you haven't been there over at Tivoli Village, Mike does an unbelievable job over there. He's got a massive selection of cigars, live entertainment, music every night. Fantastic. Private room for memberships. You could sit outside where the weather is fantastic early in the evening for live music. Spend a lot of time at La Casa Cigars. Feel at home there. They're a proud partner of our show here. As we continue on, we spent a brunt of the show, bunch of the show tonight talking about Bill Walton, the broadcasting legend, everything he was able to do. He died of cancer at the age of 71. Yesterday, we wanted to make sure that we sent him off with a good show today. And by mentioning him, and again, I got a chance to know him reasonably well, emceed a couple of events that he was the guest speaker at, and he had a positive impact on my life. And when you have people that have a positive impact on your life, you should talk about them, and I feel like we did a good job of that. Especially yesterday, 3 hours on Mad Dog Memorial Day, and then doing that again today. I mentioned Karl Anthony Towns. He had a terrible postseason so far. And he was 0 for 7 from 3. The guy shouldn't be taking 1-3. Okay, he shouldn't be taking threes. He's 6'11 guy. He should be on the low block, scoring easy buckets. And then afterwards, he lied. He lied after the game saying he's putting up 1,500 shots a day, and that's pretty much impossible.
I got to laugh. I'm putting up to 1,500 shots a day. And shot so well all playoffs. Confidence extremely high. And to be having these unfortunate bounces and these looks that are just not going in, it's tough. It's tough for sure. You know, I'm glad. Confidence-wise, I just got to keep shooting.
Look, I don't know what you do there. You can't tell people you shoot 1,500 shots a day. Barkley eviscerated him. Barkley said, that's the problem. You're shooting too many threes. Well, you shouldn't be doing that in practice. And then his coach, Chris Finch, came after him kind of lightly because he's one of the best players in the league and he hasn't showed up.
He struggled, of course, you know. It's hard to watch at times, but, you know, he had enough buckets here and there to kind of stay defensively in the second half. I was really pleased with the way he played, rebounded pretty well. But, yeah, it's, you know, he's struggling. There's no doubting that right now.
One of the things I wanted to mention, I don't know if you picked up this story, Stan Van Gundy, who calls these games, right? So he's on the A-team calling the games here. He just admitted that his wife took her life. And a lot of people didn't know about this, and it's a trending story. Former NBA coach and current TNT broadcaster, Stan Van Gundy's wife, Kim, died last August with her obituary saying she died unexpectedly. 8 months later, Van Gundy has revealed that she died by suicide. He was on the Dan Lebatard show on a podcast, and he said she took her own life. Dan, I don't care how long it goes. I can't imagine that I'll ever get over it. It was devastating. We've been married for 35 years and have been together for close to 40 years since I was 24 years old, my entire adult life. I trace everything, job changes, kids, everything. And I was with her and she was by my side. I never, ever envisioned that I was going to live another day in my life without her. Never envisioned that. So this is a pretty dramatic story for a coach who's probably going to coach again because there's not a lot of coaches left in the league. And this came out, and a lot of people are outpouring emotions to Stan Van Gundy. And I had that in my show notes today. I wanted to get that in. There's a lot of people with mental illness issues in their life, and you should always reach out to people. We had a big meeting here today, a mandatory meeting here in our company today, on office awareness, office issues that you have to go through as part of working in an office environment, and how to stay in touch with your coworkers, and what you should be able to notice or pay attention to or be alerted to. And I wanted to end the show on that topic because I think it's really important that more and more people should care about the people they work with and understand what they're going through. And I wanted to mention that Stan Van Gundy, who we've interviewed a number of times, mostly on Mad Dog, really thinking about him and praying for him after he released that information on his soulmate, his wife, who took her life. Thanks to Bobby for putting the show together. A lot of Bill Walton today. Jeff Sherman joined us. Lionel Hollins, who was his teammate for the Portland Trail Blazers. That was an in-depth conversation, one that I did not expect. Q Myers coming up next. Q has a big show. We'll be back here tomorrow putting a guest list together for the remainder of the week. Raiders will be getting together. Again, OTAs are important as this team's got to figure out a new offense. Got to put a new offense together with 12 personnel and two tight ends who are young. Got to figure that out. More on what Luke Getsy is going to do with this offense. And the passion of the defense as it continues to get better. And I will say this. I don't think Tom Telesco's done. There's still some grocery shopping money out there. I have a feeling the Raiders are going to get another player. Not saying I know anything because I don't. But I got a good feeling or a hope that the Raiders aren't done shopping this offseason. Have a great rest of the day. I'm going to be with my parents for a few more days and take advantage of that blessing. See you, everybody.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.